2019 Board of Adjustment meeting will come to order. Mr. Zinner, will you call the roll, please?
Yes. Mr. Clitheroe?
Here.
Ms. John?
Here.
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Norgard?
Here.
Mr. Waters?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Are there any changes to the agenda?
Yes, there will be. Given the discussion at our last meeting in March in regards to the desire to have staff identified within the approved minutes, you did approve the February 12th meeting minutes amended. We have those before you this evening to basically approve and then sign, along with the April 9th minutes. Unfortunately, that was an item that was not added, but if I am correct, it's a ministerial action, in essence. The only change that has been made to those minutes was at the request of Ms. Hammond, and that was to have the staff that was present at that meeting added to the minutes, and I believe, Mr. Waters, you have those minutes in front of you and should see that the staff has been added. Those are the only changes that were requested to be made at that point. And those are captured in the March 12th minutes. We're just providing them to you for signature at this point as corrected.
Okay, any other changes to the agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
As amended?
As amended.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Okay, so we'll have two motions for the two approvals of minutes. First would be the February 12th minutes as amended. Any changes or additions?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second to approve the February 12th minutes. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. You also have the March 12th minutes. Any changes to the March 12th minutes? Your motion to approve?
Move.
Second.
Motion and a second to approve the March 12th minutes. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Public hearings. Case number 75-2019.
Chair,
yes.
Before you start, I believe the court reporter needs to swear on the staff.
Okay. Sorry about that. Would the court reporter please swear on the staff? Okay, now the public hearings. Case number 75-2019, a request by Phoebe Lamar, attorney on behalf of Columbia Equity Group, LLC owners, requesting that said board grant a stormwater variance to the on-site detention requirements so as to allow the applicant to continue to provide on-site detention as previously provided on property addressed as 2210 McGuire Boulevard, which is not permitted per Chapter 12A, Article 5 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia. This item was tabled at the March 12th, 2019 meeting. Has a notice been properly advertised?
Yes.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes.
Have the parties in interest been notified?
Yes.
Have there been any inquiries?
No.
Would the person making the application please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in?
Phoebe Lamar, 111 South 9th Street. Good evening. My name is Phoebe Lamar. I'm here this evening on behalf of Columbia Equity Group, LLC, which owns Lot 28A1 of Concord Office and Industrial Plaza. It's located at 2210 McGuire Boulevard. In 2006, FedEx relocated its local operation to this location, and then in 2013, some additional property was added to allow and permit expansion to accommodate additional operational needs. From the beginning, the site was designed to incorporate environmentally sound best management practices such that water concentration was minimized and stormwater drained by sheet flow to established vegetation. This is the model that FedEx has used in all of its facilities that Allstate has worked on, partially in order to be a good citizen and minimize environmental impacts as a result of their facilities. The request before you this evening involves the addition of approximately 6,000 square feet of impervious area to the rear corner of the rear corners of the parking lot in order to accommodate truck movement. If you can see on the exhibit in front of you that it's going to be on the far east two corners of that property. It's an increase of an impervious area of 2.2% and results in an increase of peak flow from the side of less than 1 cubic foot per second. As required in 12A110C, meeting the minimum on-site management requirements is not feasible because of the physical characteristics of the site. That's the standard that we have to meet in order for this variance request to be granted. Staff has stated that they believe it's physically feasible to meet the minimum requirements. I would submit to you, however, that while it may be physically possible to meet those requirements, because almost anything is possible, it is not feasible to do so. Doing so in the real world is impractical at best. When we look at the contour map of the site, which is contour map. When we look at the contour map of the site, the only low points on this site are at the northwest corner of the site, which is the location of the current detention basin that's on the front top corner on the map in front of you. It's not possible to expand that basin sufficiently to meet the requirements of the ordinance in that location because it would have to be more than doubled in size, and there is no other place on the site to put that large of a basin. Furthermore, in order to add such detention, my client will be forced to add not only detention, but also more curbs, inlets, pipes, etc., and actually to remove the parking lot that was constructed in 2013. This will also result in an increase in concentration of water flow and negate some of the current environmentally friendly characteristics of the site. And there is no feasible location to relocate the parking that would have to be removed and still take into account the security needs of the operation, because if you drive by the site, there's actually a fence around the building and the loading areas and that sort of thing. The only thing outside of the fence is actually the parking for the employees and guests or whoever happens to get there. So in order to meet the security requirements, there's nowhere to relocate and put in the kind of detention that's necessary. As staff has pointed out, it is true that construction of this project will result in the addition of almost 1 cubic foot per second to the peak flow. What that ignores, however, is that for purposes of determining any erosion potential, the additional runoff is not in any single location. While addition of that kind of runoff in a concentrated flow might have some erosive potential, doing so over the amount of area that we're talking about in this case will add only 0.03 cubic feet per second of peak flow in any one location, and as such, no real erosion potential. The increased impervious area does not drain to the water quality treatment area, but the impact is ameliorated by the design of the site and the elevations, which result in the water sheet flowing rather than being concentrated in any single area. Furthermore, by the time the water has reached the South Fork of the Grindstone, which is where this drains to, it is less than one additional cubic foot per second added to 3,160 cubic feet per second, which is currently draining into there. It's genuinely negligible within the calculated framework. It's also important to note that if you look at the map of where this is located, where it's sheet flowing to is vegetation, it's woods, it's an area that, frankly, is ideal for this kind of drainage. And given the slopes, et cetera, in this area, it's unlikely to be developed, although, of course, anything is possible, even if not feasible. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, and Wes Bolton is also present to answer any technical questions you may have as well.
Questions from the board? I have one question.
Sure.
So FedEx has another location on Paris Road.
Okay.
It looks like they do. Is that correct?
I'm not sure of the answer to that question. Sorry.
I'm wondering what they do in this building and what the purpose of the expansion is.
My understanding is that it's in order to make the trucks that are loading and unloading the area to back up more efficient and more effective. Because if you looked at the application, the area that's being added is really pretty minimal, but it would make a big difference as far as being able to back in and out and that sort of thing at the back of the facility.
That because of a determination after the original project was built that they didn't really do it right the first time?
Probably.
So where, could you show us where that detention, dry detention is?
If you look at the front, the top corner that fronts on McGuire Boulevard, there's that parking area there. It's located under that parking lot, which is part of why it would be necessary to remove the parking in order to put, in order to enlarge it. And also part of the reason that it is difficult to expand it is because of the area that it has to be located in.
Is that whole area in the front parking? I mean, I can see cars on.
Yes.
So it's under every bit of that?
I don't think it's under every bit of it, but it is under most of the area that was expanded. If you look at that picture, you can see where it was expanded based on the different coloration of the parking lot. And if
darker is the new?
What?
The darker parking is the new?
No, the lighter is the
new
parking.
The lighter is the
new? Because it's on the northwest corner. But if you look at the elevation map, it goes up from that location in that northwest corner. I have to keep my directions straight,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It goes, the elevations increase substantially from that northwest corner through the rest of the site. There's actually, if you drive past there, there's actually a retaining wall between the parking and between the actual, where the fence is located. And due to the elevation changes, putting additional detention under the remainder of the parking lot is not particularly feasible.
So the water gets to that by just sheeting off the impervious?
The majority of it is via sheet flow. There's a little bit of concentration, but very little.
So would you explain how that works, please?
Which part of it?
Well, it's not absorbing into anything because it's an impervious surface, so it sheets off into McGuire Boulevard?
No, it sheets. Wes is going to address that,
okay.
Because that's
okay.
Beyond my pay grade.
Okay, thanks.
Wes Bolton, Allstate Consultants, 3312 Lamone Industrial Boulevard. Sure. Let me speak to this a little bit. I appreciate everything that Phoebe shared with you. The detention is actually above ground. It's not under the parking lot. That was just a miscommunication between us. There is a small basin. Let me see if I can make this a little bit bigger. So, can you guys see my mouse moving?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So this is the basin that is there currently. This picture shows it a little bit better because it's the contour map. And so the way everything drains, I'll kind of show you with my mouse as well here, and I'll just try to stay close to the microphone so it picks me up. Basically, one of FedEx's things is they don't like to concentrate any more water than they have to, which is great for the environment, as I'm sure you know. All of the water on the site drains to a swale right through here. And so you can see a little bit of riprap there that's swale reinforcement, but basically the parking lot water runs into the middle, it goes across the grass and gets some filtration, and then it all heads to this extended dry detention pond, which is what we designed in 2013 with the expansion. So that provides the detention and the water quality currently for the site. Everything else, sheet flows off either to the east or to the north. We did have to concentrate, when Phoebe mentioned some concentration, in order to meet 2013 requirements, we did have to concentrate a tiny bit of flow on the north side. You can see this swale right here. We concentrated this water in order to meet the current requirements, but we didn't want to concentrate any more than we had to, which is why we were so tight on the amount of detention that we provided.
So how much of it goes into that detention basin?
How much of the site?
How much of the water that's sheeting off?
Sure.
Draining.
So the vast majority, I don't have a drainage area map in front of me, I apologize, but basically the water from this employee parking lot goes to a swale here that catches there. And so in addition, half the roof basically goes across this lot and then into this swale, which goes to the pond. This area to the north also drains to the pond, and we picked up a little bit of site water in this area. This area to the north drains off site through the trees. This area currently all drains off through the trees. And there's a little bit, the slope kind of goes to the north, so a little bit of this water generally splits around the building. And right here is the only inlet on site, and that's put there in order to be able to catch the truck dock well, and then heads out to a pipe that runs along McGuire. So again, it was done to try to have everything flowing across grass that's possible, not concentrate everything and have a big amount of water shooting out at the end of the site, trying to make it nice and gentle.
And so the property to the east does not belong. That's a separate property, and there's water flowing, sheet flowing into that.
A very small amount, yes. Yes. And it's not concentrated. It's sheet flowing across the vegetation.
And how far is this South Fork of the Grindstone Creek?
Back it out.
It's a few hundred feet, I would say.
So if you had to meet the requirement, what would that mean on this site?
Sure, that's a great question. I appreciate that. So the way that the requirements are written is that every time you do any sort of redevelopment, you provide more detention, significantly more. And what that's meant to do per staff is to sort of go back in time to more of a hydrology that is conducive to before the development happened. And that can be really helpful in cases where you have flooding downstream, you have maybe some erosion issues. Obviously, we want to be able to use that to step it back and reduce that water. We would be going from what's called a 75% reduction of requirements to a 50% reduction. So this pond right now has about 3,800 cubic feet of detention in it. We would have to increase that to 26,000 cubic feet of detention in addition. So we would have to concentrate additional water and get it there, which would mean taking this water that's sheet flowing across vegetation, collecting it, running pipes all the way around the building to get it there. Because we've collected everything we can with the current topography. We couldn't get any more there than we could without pipes, which is why we did it that way. And then it would involve increasing the size of this basin drastically, which would likely involve removing some of this parking that was put in 2013. Because this basin, you know, this is a very steep slope down to it. We can't, you know, from this view, when there's no contours, it looks like we have all kinds of room. But when we go here, you can see it's very steep in all of these areas. So basically, this parking would have to be removed, the employee parking that was put in 2013. And it's not incredibly full in this picture, but it is full from time to time. So FedEx would not like to take that out. Now, obviously, you could take it out. You could put underground detention in there. That's a possibility. What that's going to do is concentrate the water even more. There's no chance for any infiltration like there is in a above-ground pond like we have. And so the water just sits and then flows out. So it's a possibility, but the amount of disturbance that it would take to do 26,000 would be the vast majority of that employee parking lot to get it there. And so the point being that that's a lot of environmental disturbance, whether during construction or after, for such a small amount of impervious area they actually want to add.
But if it's underground, it is going to seep out into the ground.
It depends on the type of system that you use. With something like this, it would likely be a fully enclosed system. That would be like a pipe detention system. So it would not. It would be fully enclosed in pipe tubes, basically.
And have you estimated a cost for any type of expanded to meet the requirement?
Sure. It's very difficult to give a specific cost estimate for something like this because it's not just the amount of stuff you have to put in the ground. It's all of the site work that we have to do to get there. So I did a very rough estimate. I'm anticipating that it's about 10 to 15 times the cost of what installing this pavement would be. I don't know what that number is, but it would be in the hundreds of thousands easily. Oh, and one more thing, Ms. John, I apologize. I wanted to clarify the use of why FedEx is doing this. What FedEx wants to do is they have a very successful operation here. They want to be able to load more trucks, and so they can increase their distribution operations. And so what that involves is adding some truck docks off the back of the building so that the delivery trucks can back into them and load more at once. And so that's the reason for the expansion. The trucks have to be able to get around those docks that are going in, and so that's the reason for the pavement addition. And I will say that they are adding the absolute minimal they can add to get around the docks. They're not adding any extra.
My small question was actually just a clarification. On this image that you have up, I assume it's these two little yellow areas that are the, where the new pavement will be.
Correct.
Okay.
I apologize for not labeling that better.
Just as a point of clarification, in the application, you identify several different surface areas. I'm just curious, 6,000 is obvious. I'm not sure what 84,060 square feet is, and I'm not sure what 152.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Norgott. I can absolutely speak to that. That was from the previous redevelopment. So the current site, let me flip back to, so this is a picture of the way the site was originally built in 2006 approximately. And so the expansion that took place, you can see the change there, and I'll flip back and forth a couple times. This expansion added approximately 84,000 square feet of impervious area. Now, what we were able to do because of FedEx wanting to sheet flow everything as opposed to concentrating it was we were actually able to get more of the site to drain to the pond. So there's some intangible benefits from it draining through the pond. It's not necessarily quantifiable from a water quality perspective, but there's 150,000+ square feet of pavement actually going through the pond. So it's really a matter of the size of the pond that's holding us back from providing more detention in that regard. But the new area would have to still have all the pipes to go around to get there. That makes sense.
Can I ask what size storm this was designed for?
The detention pond is designed, the city requirements are the 2-year storm, the 10-year storm, and the 100-year storm. I believe those were the 2013 requirements. They've changed a couple times. Let me consult my report briefly. All the numbers of flow estimates that we gave for this application were the 100-year flows. So that 0.03 CFS is a 100-year flow. I believe I have the design here in my previous storm report. I was close. The 1-year, the 2-year, the 10-year, and the 100-year was the design storms for the 2013.
Grindstone Creek drains into the Hinkson watershed, is that correct?
I am not sure, to be honest with you.
Shared waterway. I'm wondering.
You mean from a water quality
waterway
perspective?
Waterway now.
I believe city staff would be able to answer that. I see some nodding going on over there. But when we get to that point, or if you'd like to answer now.
Grindstone does go into Hinkson Creek.
And it's still considered an impaired waterway.
It is. It was listed on the MDNR TMDL list, but it's currently has a collaborative adaptive management process to address the TMDL.
But it hasn't been finished, it has, or it's been in works for years. I mean, I'm
just
wondering.
Well, it's a process, yes.
Yeah. Any other questions?
So the 0.03 cubic feet per second, that's the flow off the lot?
The additional flow off of the new pavement, yeah. That's the most it will be at any point. In most areas, it will be less than that. There's a tiny bit of concentration that takes place because of grades and just the way the pavement has to drain. We went ahead and did a whole design so we can make sure that was right. And so there's a couple areas where about 10 feet horizontally is concentrated to one point. And the increase in discharge at that point is 0.03 CFS in the 100-year storm. And I hesitate to say 0.03 CFS. That's such a small amount. It's not really quantifiable, but I did the calculation anyways. So it's within the calcs.
What is the gross amount for that 100-year storm?
Like from the site or at a specific area? From the site? The current 100-year outflow with the 2013 detention is 45 CFS. And that is specifically from the detention pond. So the entire site 100-year outflow is more. I would say, I don't have that here because this is just the detention calcs. I did it a couple weeks ago. I believe it's in the, I think it's 80 to 90 CFS overall for the entire site.
So I'm not sure if you're the appropriate person to ask this, but has there been consideration of some type of mitigation effort as the ordinance provides for a suggestion of mitigation if a variance is granted?
Sure. We looked into that. I will say that we still exceed water quality requirements, and
yes.
So we felt good about that. We had quite a bit of extra that we were able to build in. Even with this extra, we still exceed the requirements. So in some way, we felt that that was mitigation for this. The other thing to note is when we're doing detention requirements, this increase is so small that if I calculate the detention before and after, it comes out with the same number. We calculate impervious area in steps. So there's not even a step here that's increased. So when if I was to calculate mitigation for detention, I would calculate the pre and the post and find the difference. And when we run these calcs for a site like this with this small of an increase, there is no difference. It doesn't go up a curve number.
I have one final question, I think. And I'll preface this by a comment. We heard a previous case, case number 1964, stormwater management variance spec in October, I believe. And during that case, we were presented with worksheets and hydrology maps and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, was there any reason that you didn't provide those in the application? Because I feel like it's something that can be somebody can fall back on if this were ever challenged.
Sure, that's a great question. The main reason is it's so negligible in our calcs. In filling out those sheets, the answers would essentially be the same. I did discuss our application quite a bit with Ms. Keys and ended up adding some of those numbers to our letter. You can see my letter has a lot of output, but I did not provide worksheets as part of that. It is the calculation of those fine items. I do those by hand because they're so minuscule that the software sees it the same. So that's why I presented it in the letter as opposed to turning in sheets, because the increase is so negligible.
So your feeling is if there should be a challenge or someone 5 years, 3 years, the third redevelopment goes back to look, mm-hmm. there's enough evidence here that people would understand exactly what was done?
Absolutely, I do.
The people who own the property on both sides of this, actually the empty lot to the south and the empty lot to the north, called me about this and took a look at all of it and had no issues with this. So for whatever that's worth.
And I will mention that I personally did the 2013 expansion, so all these original calcs are my calcs. So I feel very confident in this approach and request, but that's a great question and I appreciate it.
So I am going to assume that there was no contemplation that there might be a small incremental expansion like this in the future.
Correct.
are you kicking yourself now for not doing that extra pavement?
Yeah. Yes. You know, Site Plan Corporate from FedEx determines a lot of the items that they need. And so parking and space was something that they needed. And so we maximized every little bit of it. I spent many an evening doing iterations of this pond, trying to make it as big as I could, and I would love to have gotten some extra in there to account for this pavement. But again, some of it is what it speaks to, is they don't put a bunch of extra pavement out there they don't think they'll need. So they ran it pretty tight with the first expansion and then found they needed the extra.
Well, what you might be suggesting is that had you done the pavement to begin with, you wouldn't have had to change the engineering on the detention basin.
Correct.
Only because of the way the law's written with the catch-up provisions.
That's absolutely correct, yes.
So had the extra concrete been put in to begin with, what difference in the detention would there have been in the size of it?
Sure, it would have been the same. It's so minor in the impervious area increase that it wouldn't have changed the curve number, so the calculations would have been the same. There's a threshold where it would tick into changing things, but this is so small it would not have.
Sort of like paying taxes.
right. So I reran all the calculations just to make sure of that, and I feel confident that it is. So yes, if it would have been added as a part of the redevelopment that happened in 2013, everything would have been just the way that it was. It's just a matter of the way the ordinance is written and a matter of the way the calculations work out.
And the ordinance was the same then as it is
no,
now?
No, the ordinance has changed. It's the way the tiering of the redevelopment works. But the base calculations for detention are the same.
So this tiering was not part of the stormwater ordinance when you did this original expansion?
It was in some form, but I don't recall. It's changed several times since it's been adopted, and it was water quality, and there was a redevelopment section, but I believe it was interpreted differently than it is now. I believe there's been several revisions, and I can't remember when those occurred in relation to 2013.
So was there any discussion at the time that redevelopment, we're going to get hammered unless we, you know, kind of overbuild now?
That's certainly a conversation that we have a lot more now because we've learned from these. I don't recall if that conversation was had with FedEx at the time. You know, a lot of these sites are laid out, again, by their corporate folks, and so they have specific needs, and those don't change very much. They need X amount of pavement and X amount of parking spaces, and so we don't have a lot of back and forth with layout with them, or hey, maybe you should add a little extra. So, and part of their thing is as well, they don't want to add extra unless they know they will need it. So, whereas one might build some extra pavement in on a project on something that's a corporate prototype, that doesn't happen as often. But in hindsight, I should have done it.
I have another question. So, with the new ordinance, I'm not sure how new the stormwater ordinance is. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the ordinance seems to be trying to make up for, in 2003 or whenever this was first developed, there was no stormwater ordinance. And so it's trying to put things to help the impaired waterways and so on. And that's the reason for the mitigation clauses.
Sure. So we're talking about a couple different things. We're talking about water quality and water quantity. So I would say that the majority, when we're talking about impaired waterways, we're talking about the quality of the water for the most part, because it's all the suspended solids, it's all the sediments, it's all the pollutants that run off of parking lots. And so that's not actually part of this variance request. We're meeting all of those. And so when we're talking about quantity, the discussion then goes more to flooding and erosion. My feeling, again, is that the way this is draining, the established vegetation that's going across, and then it goes right into a major waterway. It's drops of water in the ocean at that point. It's less than a CFS into 3,000. So our feeling is that that's negligible when it comes to the entirety of the watershed.
If you had the expanded basin, is there any way you can quantify the improvement that we'd see to the streams at that point,
sure.
In terms of, lessening the erosion, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Even with the 26,000 cubic feet added, if we went full on, and I mean, say we were at fourth tier redevelopment, and we had to do 100% of the detention required in a watershed as big as the South Fork, the Grindstone. It would be difficult to quantify any benefit that you would see.
So do you think there would be no benefit, or it's just difficult to quantify it?
It's hard to say no benefit because you could argue that any reduction could have a benefit. I don't think it's a quantifiable benefit, if that helps. Mm-hmm. Because it's really about a systematic approach. And I see this, I would not be here arguing against this if there were structures right downstream that were impacted, if there was erosion directly downstream that we were dealing with, we would not have a case to present because this runs right into a major creek through this established vegetation. If I was to pull up three water quality experts and say, how should we go about this? They'd say sheet flow it across established vegetation to a waterway. Mm-hmm. And we'd say, great, that's what we're doing. But which is one of the reasons why we don't want to concentrate it and run it around to the other side of the building and send it into this pond that's already there that's going to concentrate it and send it on. That's why we're advocating for this approach.
So if someone does develop that, this, how many ever acres that is behind there,
mm-hmm.
Are they going to have some type of stormwater issue to deal with?
That's a great question. The amount that we're running across there is very small, and it's not concentrated. So it would be any site that we develop has water running onto it from adjoining sites. It would be completely typical with that. There's nothing that we're concentrating. By ordinance, if the grades had worked out, we could have a detention pond over there and have a large amount of water discharging that we had routed over to that area, which would be acceptable to the ordinance, which is not what we're doing. There's such little water there that it's nothing that's atypical of what anyone would have to develop.
Any other questions for Mr. Bolton? Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments from staff?
Were there any outstanding questions from the board that they wanted to ask staff? I believe there was a couple questions that you all posed to the speaker that.
Well, one.
I don't remember what they were.
A question that didn't get answered was, what was the, what did the catch-up provisions look like, in before the stormwater ordinance was revised, and when was that?
Right. So the stormwater ordinance refers to our stormwater manual, and that sets out the actual requirements and calculations that need to happen for the detention. When the manual was originally put out in, I think, 2008, 2009, there was some provision for redevelopment, and I forget the reasoning, but maybe it was too stringent in certain areas. That piece got reworked in 2013, and that's what we currently have now. And I believe that's what was currently implemented with the original redevelopment, like Mr. Bolton was talking about, was that when you did a redevelopment with this current system, it's this kind of complicated flow chart, but it's understood that in a redevelopment, you're not going to be able to provide all of the quantity detention and all of the water quality on your site because you're redeveloping the site. So you have constraints that you didn't plan on as like you would with a greenfield. And so the idea was that over the course of time, there was this perspective that, you know, when a property redeveloped over 50 years or 100 years, you would eventually catch up and get all the detention. You know, I'm not sure we anticipated that some of these redevelopments would occur so quickly one after the other. But that was the case with this. So in the 2013 redevelopment, they weren't required to do the 100% detention, but they got a 75% reduction. So then with the second redevelopment, you go to a 50% reduction. Well, the percentage is linear, but the requirement for the actual detention is not linear. As you can see, it went up quite significantly what would be required for the quantity detention. To Mr. Bolton's point, you know, with that 6,000 square feet, if they'd have done that originally with that first redevelopment, their actual detention would not have changed at all because it's such a small amount. But because this is the second redevelopment, that detention requirement goes up significantly.
So you were involved in the revision of the ordinance back then?
I was on the periphery of it. We'll put it that way.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
But, I was on the periphery.
So you mentioned that it was not anticipated that there would be redevelopments occurring so quickly, one after the other.
Right. I don't think that was the vision for this redevelopment piece. This has always been a difficult piece as far as our stormwater requirements is trying to figure out, you know, what's a fair way to catch up, you know, to the idea is like all of downtown was completely developed. So how do you go backwards? How do you try to start implementing some water quality and quantity controls in a completely developed area? And, you know, so trying to figure out the best way to address that in redevelopment has been a process. We'll just say that. So this was the next step in the process, was this complicated flow chart that we've got now.
Was there any contemplation at all that not only would these redevelopments occur quickly, they might be very small, but still qualify as a, you know, quote-unquote redevelopment?
Right. And there are some provisions for that. It's difficult to come up with every scenario that's going to happen. I know one of the ones that came up is somebody wanted to put like an air conditioning pad, you know, on their property. Well, that kicked in some redevelopment requirements, and it's like, is that really reasonable? You know, to you have to put in detention and bioretention for an air conditioning pad. Another one was Columbia Mall when they wanted to just replace failing pavement. Well, when they replaced pavement, did that mean that they needed to do, you know, detention and water quality? So it's quite a complicated thing to figure out how to legislate.
Some areas of the development code, there are thresholds that you have to meet before, you know, a certain provision, you know, standards, current day standards are required.
Right.
Was there any discussion about maybe creating some thresholds like that so that a very small redevelopment like this wouldn't trigger a giant catch-up provision that would, you know, kind of dwarf the actual project?
Right. And there is a little bit of that in these regulations. But again, it probably doesn't address this particular situation as helpfully as it could.
There's some of that in the stormwater ordinance or in other parts of the...
It's in the stormwater manual. The flow chart, I can show you part. Can I show them part of it? So the page before this, you know, it asks, is this upstream of a critical downstream location, you know, which is where we look at our infrastructure to determine if the infrastructure is undersized. And that would be a case where we would want a site to have detention if there was a downstream site that had flooding or something like that. So obviously this one's just upstream of the creek, so there's no... critical downstream location here. Is this the first land? You know, is this the first redevelopment? And if it is, then it asks, is there an increase in impervious area? And then it goes to this next page, and you know, it talks about sites. You know, up to 3,000 square feet of impervious area added. This one had sites with 3,000 to 10,000 square feet of impervious added. Oh, let's see. It's been a while since I've gone through this. Okay, yeah, if you want, that would be helpful.
So there is a tiering system that is very helpful for first redevelopments, but it's cumulative on the impervious area. So if you add 80,000 and then you add 6,000, it's treated as 86,000. And so you go right to the top tier, and then it has to ratchet up every time. So that is how it's seen. So we were kind of dinged on this project because we did such a big first redevelopment. If it was your first redevelopment that was small, and I compliment staff, they've added some of this to help those first ones. But the second ones are doozy for us, especially on this one, as you can see. So that's where it hits. It's cumulative. And that's something that honestly, you know, until we went through it with staff, we did not know that. And I think some of staff didn't know that either. And so... I recall now we did this right when the flow chart came through, and you're right. But at that time, we did not realize it was cumulative. So I thought a second redevelopment like this would go to that tier, and it would just be for part of it. So there's been some confusion, and to staff's credit, it's incredibly difficult to implement an ordinance that can cover every situation and work for everything. We completely understand what they're trying to do with this ordinance. And so, again... we're here talking to you guys because we feel like we have a case in this case to bring to the Board of Adjustment to be able to deviate in those special circumstances that don't make sense in the ordinance.
And they are providing more than what was required with water quality. It's just the quantity piece that we're talking about. So
I guess you agree that it's not a quantifiable benefit to demand an enlarged detention or to decrease the flow through additional detention?
Correct. The quantity piece, you know, that would be for the 100-year event, for the, you know, the very large events. You know, I haven't done any calculations. I'm not sure if Wes has, but for those smaller storms, the one, you know, the 2-year events, the detention he has may be adequate, you know, to accommodate the larger requirement. It would be for that 100-year, you know, that catastrophic type of event, you know, where it would make any sort of appreciable difference. And so then you've got to weigh that with the costs involved. But from a water quality piece, they've addressed everything.
I have run some of those calculations. Thank you for bringing that up. I have. We met in several of the storms, but not in the largest. And so we didn't feel like we could bring it to staff and say we meet because we don't in the biggest storms. So it has enough in the smaller storms to meet. And I think the 1 and the 2, the 10, I believe, was just barely over, and the 100 was the tiny. I mean, we're talking about minuscule amounts. But yes, some storms are met. It's just the biggest that are not met.
I think you made a statement that it's not a quantifiable benefit to have to increase, that it would make a difference, and I just wanted to kind of
right.
clarify
and I yes, I mean quantifiable in the watershed.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Right. The overall watershed would not see a difference, probably.
So I have a question of staff. Is there any chance or probability or plan of addressing this seeming unfairness in future revisions of the stormwater manual?
It has been discussed numerous times. It's an inertia thing, you know, just trying to come up with what would the next version of redevelopment requirements look like, and you know, how do you make that happen?
So, in your vision, if the changes were made, would consider this case a qualifying case that would not meet the threshold to require a higher standard?
You know, obviously that would be any new rules. Either we would need to have a committee, or, you know, we would need to vet that with a variety of people. As Mr. Bolton mentioned, if this had been included with the first redevelopment, we wouldn't be here. You know, if that's 6,000 square feet, nothing would have changed with what's there now. So that would be the point that I, you know, would have in my head. But, you know, what the community believes is the best course of action, you know, I can't predict that.
And I think the purpose of the Board of Adjustments is to try to address circumstances that just don't quite fall within the parameters of what can be legislated, because you can't come up with every single circumstance when you're trying to come up with an ordinance. So while they may or may not at some point, while there may or may not be at some point a change to the ordinance, that's really the purpose of the Board of Adjustments, is to try to make sure that we are addressing those strange circumstances.
I have a question of staff. And so in the staff report, it says the actual increased runoff does have a corrosive potential. However, site characteristics and the actual final grading will determine if there is a downstream impact with regard to erosion to the drainage way. And I'm guessing you have requirements for plans for the final grading or whatever of this redevelopment.
Right. The building and site development, they review all the plans for that. And I didn't have, you know, final grading plans in front of me with this information, so I didn't know if it was if that one CFS was in one spot, but Mr. Bolton's explained that it was distributed around the site. And again, that's one CFS for the 100-year event. So for the smaller events, it's going to be much less flow. But the point being, when one CFS is concentrated, people would see that in their yard. I mean, that's something they could see in a yard.
If a house were built on the lot behind here and it was all concentrated, the homeowner would.
Right.
But it is.
But going through the woods, yes. And then being distributed, you know, to different parts of the site, you're probably not going to see it.
One more thing from the staff. There are a number of judgment statements in the variance language that are reserved for the board. Now, perhaps we've touched on all those, but I'm not sure what the thinking was in putting that language in there.
Right. In the ordinance, it says good and sufficient cause based on an unreasonable burden or hardship has been proved. Again, proof is in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. So I didn't want to presuppose that you felt like this was proved one way or the other. So,
any other questions from the board for staff? Any additional comments from the applicant? So at this point, I think I ought to hit pause. I inadvertently skipped over asking if there was anybody in any other members of the audience that wanted to speak in favor or opposed to the application. Let the record show that there's nobody else sitting.
I have to ask.
So moving on.
I have one more question. So in the 12A, 110C, through 4, I don't know. It says if a variance granted by the board will likely result in a lower level of stormwater control, the board shall impose reasonable mitigation measures, including but not limited to the following. Now, I always thought shall meant it will be done.
Correct.
Are we obligated to impose some type of stipulation?
That's if you.
Yep.
If a variance granted will likely result.
So you need to make a determination whether or not it will likely result in a lower level of stormwater control.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions? In that case, we'll close the public hearing. Comments from legal?
A few administrative things. We need to get some things on the record. So at this time, I'd like to move to get some exhibits included into the record, beginning with the staff report to the Board of Adjustment. We move to have that admitted as City Exhibit 1.
No objection.
So, yes. Okay, thank you. Next up, we'll go ahead and lump together the locator maps, the application, denial letter, and supporting documents, the hearing advertisement, the parties and interest letter, and mailing list. I'll lump those all together as City Exhibit 2 and seek to have that admitted at this time.
Ordered.
Next up, we'll go ahead and admit the ordinances that are pertinent to our case tonight, specifically Chapter 12A, Article 5, Chapter 12A, Article 6, and 29-6.1. At this time, we seek to admit that as City's Exhibit 3.
So ordered.
And the applicant was kind enough to hand me a printout, what looks like a printout of the various slides that the Board of Adjustment reviewed a second ago. So we'll go ahead and seek to admit that as City Exhibit 4.
So ordered.
Okay. And as in past practice, I do want to give you all the opportunity to hear from your attorney the standards that apply today. I know that we have addressed stormwater case before as a group, and you have
heard me give the whole spiel on the variance. But just as a reminder, we are not dealing with our traditional criteria. We are dealing with the specific criteria listed in section 12A-110, which has a whole host, as Ms. Keyes said, of judgment calls. At this time, I am happy to read those aloud if you would like. Regardless, it will be part of the record since the ordinance itself has been admitted.
Everyone has a copy of these criteria. Would anyone like for them to be read?
So if there's none of that, that's all I have.
Okay, comments from the board. What's everybody thinking?
Well, I think the Mr. Bolton cleared things up significantly from the information we had been given to deliberate and look upon. So that's much appreciated. And some of it that would have been clear, I would have liked even early on, I might have had fewer questions. The levels and income tax level, the tax level, that's an apt comparison.
I don't know. I felt I was coming into this pretty skeptical, actually, and I still object somewhat to the lack of supporting documentation. As you recall, we did have this previous case, number 1964, in which worksheets were provided and so forth, so that we had some record of proof that calculations had in fact been done, and there was some. It was recorded for the courts if they needed it. So I will probably support this, but I do object to that particular aspect of the application. They've done a pretty good job of demonstrating the minimum requirements that we have to grant them a variance.
Comments? Motions?
Move to approve.
Second.
Would you like to clarify your motion, or would you like it to be just as it's written in the
application? Just as it's written in there.
Okay. Do I need to restate that?
So the motion is to approve the variance
as requested. Yes.
I don't know if we have we don't require them to go through the full thing, do we, Pat? I don't remember.
I don't think we don't, but I'll restate the motion for the purposes of the record. There is a motion on the floor to approve the requested variance to section 12A, 110 B and C to grant a waiver of the on-site detention requirements for the FedEx site located at 2210 McGuire Boulevard.
There's a motion and a second. Mr. Zenner, will you call the roll, please?
Yes, I will call the roll. Mr. Clitheroe?
Yes.
Ms. John?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Norgaard?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Motion has 5 votes of the board deemed approved.
Okay. Thank you. Additional public comments. The applicant like to make any other public comments?
There's no more public to be commenting.
Okay. Any comments from the staff?
Your next meeting will be on tentatively on May 14th. It is my understanding, Ms. John has informed me that she will not be present, so we will have an alternate called up for that meeting should we have an agenda item. I apologize. Yes, we do have an agenda item. It is a signed variance request on behalf of Our Lady of Lourdes that has been submitted early. We may have additional items being presented on the application deadline of April 15. So there is a meeting May 14. It'll be at 7 p.m. Same place. Save your seats. And we will see you then. That is all we have for tonight. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other board comments? I might mention one thing. You know, this is one of those cases where, you know, it seems like there's consensus that there may be an issue with this, with the ordinance as it's written. Didn't really handle this case very well. And Aaron, you expressed some, I don't know, if frustration is too strong a word, with how to proceed on something like that. You know, we're starting to develop a little bit of a process for handling some of this stuff. So I don't know if we do it this time or whether, you know, for future discussion, it might be worth making a note that, you know, here's something that maybe we want to, you know, consider a little bit more.
The last thing I have to say is we're not engineers, and I don't see why we would want to put our hand in this.
I don't think we would ever pretend to be engineers, but this would be a case where maybe we would ask staff to write a report that says what are some ways that we could resolve cases like this before they get to the Board of Adjustment. That, you know, this very small...
One thing that occurred to me is that if instead of specific numbers of like 3,000 or whatever it was, if it were a percentage of the total impervious area that was the increase. The increase here was less than 3% of the total impervious area. Mm-hmm. That would be so small that it wouldn't make much difference. And if they, instead of putting it in exact amounts, they put it as percentages, it might work better.
The problem with exact amounts, though, is that you don't get a cubic feet per second estimation. So for an impervious surface area increase of 10%, 10% of what? 10% of a square mile?
10% of the already existing impervious area,
right,
is what I'm talking about.
I understand,
about.
But if the existing area is a square mile, then 10% of a square mile is a lot of area. So I think I tend to agree with the square footage requirement is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, there's all different kinds of wrinkles to this, and, mm-hmm. you know, the Board of Adjustment is probably not where this discussion would take place. I think the board could show up for whatever public hearing is called to discuss, you know, the actual specifics of any change that would be considered. But I'm just merely suggesting that, you know, maybe we put this on a list of things to consider asking the City Council to take a look at. And because in this case, it, you know, because of the unanimous vote, you know, it seemed like the consensus was that, you know, this was just not a reasonable request of the developer in this case. Well,
I would suggest and caution the board in asking for council to direct our utilities department to engage in an additional study. The stormwater ordinance, prior to its adoption in 2007, when it became into existence, went through a very long and laborious process of being developed with, as I understand it, and it was before my time, a lot of contention. The amendments made to it in 2013 were no less contentious. Stormwater is an extremely touchy subject within this community, negotiated over many long, long hours with our design professionals. The last stormwater variance you had was in October. If you have more stormwater variances coming forward in the near future in relationship to the amount of development permits we issue that fall under the definition of redevelopment, then I think we may want to consider discussing a report to council. But I believe, as Ms. Lamar pointed out, the purpose for the board is to use its judgment based upon the testimony given to determine if, in fact, it is reasonable to apply or not apply the regulations. The Director of Utilities has significant berth within the variance procedure by which to grant waiver. Our design staff is not looking to increase its workload or that of the design professionals. In this particular instance, the director was limited by the fact that they were seeking a full waiver. If they were offering an alternative, on the other hand, the Director of Utilities potentially would have been able to have administratively approved this request, but that was not the case. The code is very clear. You have to offer the option for an alternative, not just an outright waiver, for him to be able to act. So what you don't see are a lot of developments in which there is negotiation and there is resolution without coming here. So between October
and what would have been March, we were looking at 6 months basically before you had your second variance request for a stormwater issue. If we start seeing an uptick in them, I think yes, then maybe it is worthwhile to request, but I do not know where this would appear in the work program for our utility staff, especially our stormwater utility, if we even presented a report requesting you've observed two cases in which it seemed that there was minimal increase in impervious surfaces and therefore you believe it may be a time to now start looking to modify.
And to add to Pat's point, I actually think this evening was a good example of, as Ms. Lamar and Mr. Bolden highlighted, the purpose of this body. This was a very specific situation that, at least, unless I'm wrong, doesn't happen that frequently, where we have based all the facts that we had here and they didn't want to offer an alternative. So they have ultimate relief, which has come to you all, for you all to use your judgment to determine whether or not this is a unique enough circumstance that deserves it. So I would recommend against forfeiting that power or asking the city council to take that away, because ultimately, whenever you create too much of a one-size-fits-all, then there's no real wiggle room for these unique circumstances. So actually, I really appreciated the questions that were here, because it really did flesh this out and show that, look, you all should unanimously vote in favor of it. So anyway, my two cents.
Point taken. If it's the will of the group that, you know, this is not something that we ought to, you know, a can of worms that we want to open back up. It just seemed like in this case, it was such a no-brainer that, clearly there's an issue here. Why not just put it on somebody's radar screen to, you know, next time there's an opportunity to make a change. But, you know, if we'd rather consider these kind of ad hoc, you know, as they come along.
Yeah. I think this was a particularly not one that we're likely to see very often.
I hope you're right about that.
I hope so, too.
I guess we'll see.
Start seeing them, then we'll have to do something about it.
I would just, before we finish up here, I just want to, my objection that I raised tonight is that the application from a record standpoint seemed incomplete. And I wonder if there's not a way that we can request that applications come a little bit more complete. I know as part of their stormwater application procedure, they're required to submit numerous documents. I don't think we need to see all of them, but I think some of those would have helped at least me come to a conclusion sooner without quite so many questions.
So you're not asking necessarily that the applicant submit any more documentation. It's just that we be given more of the documentation that they submit.
Well, yeah, I think some of this material staff has already, and so it could be part of their staff report.
I don't have any more material than what was provided to you in your packet this evening.
Well, then I would like to chime in. I have often felt frustrated at what we're given by the applicant, that it doesn't seem complete, that it's just like, where was that retention? Well, now I can certainly see it there, that it's pointed out, but it would have, and even in some of the narrative, it could have been more clearly expressed. Where was the grindstone? You know, it's 200 feet away. Well, you know, water issues are a big thing to me. So where is it? And where is this sheet flow going? So I've often thought a little more information from the applicant I would find very welcome.
I would add to that, though, from a courtroom standpoint, since you all are a quasi-judicial body, the way you send that message is conveying it to the applicants. This is what I expect. It's ultimately the burden's on them to prove to you and convince to you in whatever method they can to vote a certain way, right? I would be reluctant to tell an applicant how they have to prove their case. And let them do it. You all can establish standards for yourselves and say, look, this will definitely convince me, and vote however you see fit. But I would be reluctant to establish a one size fits all for every applicant, because they should be able to make their case as they see fit. So
I really think that it's not, I don't expect the applicant to provide everything
as part of the application, because that's why they come before us, to speak to us and explain everything to us. So.
Okay, good discussion. Any other comments? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All right, we're adjourned.